Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map. Welcome, listeners, to These Parts for another week. I'm one of your hosts, Elliot McNally. With me, of course, is my brother, my friend, my traveling companion, Vince McNally. Vince, I hate to do this, but I need to start off the show with a little bit of bad news.
Oh boy, Elliot. I don't know if this week can take much more of that, but I'm all ears.
Well, I recently got off the phone with our producer, Xander, and he had sent me some samples of our recently pressed almanac, Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' Comprehensive Guide to Small Town America. Of course, we're approaching rapidly the release of this, and we wanted to get samples of the cover, and it turns out that the hardcover version was too hard, and the soft cover version was too soft.
Yes, unfortunately, the hardcover version had a what do you call that? The scale on which you measure gemstones and other precious materials?
Quadrites, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that's right. So it was so hard that when you attempted to pick it up, it would actually abrade the skin and it would cause bleeding, severe bleeding.
Yeah. And then the soft cover version, it was like when you're making paper and you have that mush, they didn't actually press it together to create the cover. Mm. It's just a bunch of mush that holds it together.
I think chemically speaking, it was a gelatin, actually, the cover.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do, you know, in the next handful of weeks before this thing drops. But I think, you know, if we put our heads together and we tell Xander to just work a little harder, I'm sure it will be fine.
Yeah, I think the takeaway here is that Xander's not working very hard. I think doesn't it always seem to come back to this? I mean, I'm sorry to bring up this uncomfortable topic, listeners, but doesn't it just seem that Xander is always slacking?
It really does. And this is a constant thing on the message boards. Of course, you and I know that we've made several different usernames in which we talk about Xander on the message board, so it appears that a lot of people hate him. But if you look at the message boards, there's a ton of people that don't like him.
Yeah, I think actually aliases for you and myself make up 98% of the users on our message boards. But don't let that discourage you from posting.
You mean you're Map Guy 28?
Wait, you're Map Guy 27?
Yeah.
Oh. Huh. Wait, are you Map Guy 29?
I don't know who that is. I'm Map Guy 30.
Oh, and 31. Well, see, I'm Map Guy 31 and 32. So
we're both 31.
Whoa.
This is freaking me out a little bit.
we should handle this off air.
Yeah, we probably should. None of the listeners want to hear this or go to the message boards for that matter. But Vince, we're in an amazing town, one that is hopefully going to be part of our forthcoming almanac if the cover thing gets sorted out. And it's a town that I think we should put on the map.
Absolutely, Elliot. And barring our almanac being destroyed or barring the town being destroyed, we hope it makes it in because this town is amazing for sort of a different reason. It's a miracle of architecture and geography intersecting. It's almost as if this town should not exist.
It's true. And the reason it exists, though, is because of, wouldn't you know it, a sign from God, from the town founder, that where he found a certain symbol, he should build that town. We all know the story of, for instance, Mexico City. The Aztecs found an eagle holding a serpent on a cactus, and that is where they built the city. A similar scenario happened here. Unfortunately, Marshfield, Mississippi, where we are today, is on a giant marsh. It's on a swamp, and therefore it is sinking 10 feet a year.
Yeah, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the foundation story here is that a blue jay was holding a radiator hose and parked itself on a overturned pickup truck. And so that was where they decided that they would. It's very similar, actually.
Yeah, the signals may have been crossed that day, and that's why they decided to build the town here. But regardless, people are dogged. They have a tenacity here, and they don't want to leave their town because it's supposed to be here. And at the forefront of this ideology is an architect in the town. Would you care to introduce yourself?
Well, certainly I would. I appreciate you boys having me here, and I know that you were talking about your book, so if I could just mention, you did provide me with an advanced copy, and you know, that cover issue is a problem. It does remind me of when you get that orange juice with just pulp in it, and if you had maybe strained it through a coffee filter of some sort, and then you didn't even bother to just wipe away all the liquid, and you just sort of pressed the pulpy mass against the front of a book, and that's it. And you just left it there. That's sort of what it feels like. It disintegrates right in your hands.
Yeah, that's a really fair description.
Xander informed us if we want to move forward with the soft cover, we'll actually have to package the almanac in a juice jug.
Yes. Well, and anyway, so I appreciate you bringing the topic up of Our Fair Town, and my name is Bill. But you can call me Mountain Man.
Oh, well, Mountain Man, you're pretty well dressed for a mountain man, or at least the classical definition of the term, and you are an architect. Before you dive into putting a town on the map, maybe we should explain why this town needs such a dedicated architect. And that's because, if I may, your town is slowly sinking. Built on top of a bog, the town seeps into the earth by a rate of about 10 feet a year. Isn't that right?
Yeah, 10 or 15 feet. But I think, as we all know, the world is in a sort of constant state of entropy anyway. So aren't we all truly sinking into the abyss?
That's one poignant way to look at it.
Counterpoint.
While we think on that, can you sink a pin into Marshfield, Mississippi?
Certainly. I would like to remind the viewers that if you are sinking pins in at home, to please be careful, especially if you're near Marshfield, Mississippi. It is very likely that sinking a pin into anything will cause further destruction and chaos.
Not only in the town, but just in the map in general. Our comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall maps have taken into account that Marshfield, Mississippi is on a marsh, and that area of the paper is very soggy. So wherever you stick a pin around there, it will just envelop anything.
If you buy topographical maps of the area is actually in bright red with those nuclear hazard signs around it.
You make an important point about the color of our map. If you actually look at a topographical map, it's, you know, the type that has rainbow colors to indicate the depth.
Yeah, as most do, yeah.
Yeah, it looks mostly like just a bowl of Fruit Loops got spilled. That's sort of our fair town's appearance.
An apt description. Now, if I may, what is it like living in a town where your buildings and your streets and everything else are constantly sinking? We had to outfit our RV to be like one of those pontoon fan boats just to get around here. But that's not the luxury that most of the dwellings enjoy here.
You're condescending here a little? Maybe that, we don't have fan boats here? Is that what you're saying? I don't want to
No, not at all. In fact, there are many fan boats here. I'm saying the permanent structures, though, you know, they have to stand on something, so they need an architect to take care of them.
I think what Vince means is, what are you at Mountain Man and Associates architecture firm doing to help this town?
First and foremost, I think one of our most important tasks is to chase condescending city boys out of our town so that they don't weigh the streets down any further. Now,
I think we've gotten off on the wrong foot here, Mountain Man.
Oh, have we now? Okay, let's start off on the right foot then.
Please continue, Mountain Man. You were saying about your duties as lead architect here in town?
I think one of the biggest considerations as the architect is to remember that not all sides are sinking at the same rate. So, from the outside, it may appear as though our town is tilted, like incredibly tilted, in sort of a this side is sinking while the other side just appears normal, just at a normal height. And so one thing to keep in mind is that you do want to make sure that when one side of the town sinks before the other, that the other side just is kind of looking normal.
So you are constantly having to counterweight the town.
Precisely. It seems like you've got a good grasp on this, Elliot, and that's essential in a town like this.
I took one community college course in architecture, and I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on, you know, the inner workings of the medium.
Oh, I love talking architecture shop, so if you'd like to discuss some of those finer points of architectural theory, I'd be happy to indulge you.
I actually have a BFA in architecture, if I could also, you know, join this discussion.
Maybe at a later time. I guess if it's going to be everybody just involved, maybe this is a different discussion.
Well, I guess it could just be us. Elliot got a D+ in that class.
Well, yeah, but we wanted to have more of like an armchair conversation architecture, not, you know, a hoity-toity college boy right. conversation.
Right. We're looking more to, can I speak a little bit of crass here? Is that okay?
Oh yeah, speak freely. We're a show about the people.
I was just thinking that Elliot and I might just kind of shoot the person from out of town about architecture rather than getting into more of your perspective on things there, Vince.
Why are you caressing your blunderbuss as you say this?
That's just a force of habit, just to remind folks that, you know, we take care of our own items and we take care of our own here. So take that for what you will.
All right, I'll just remind everyone that Elliot's also from out of town as we move ahead to maybe our first segment, hopefully not our last one, Elliot. Should we do this?
Let's move on right over. And just so you know, I feel like a local already, but I want to talk about local legends.
Yes, listeners, the towns that we stop in often have their own lore, their mythos, the things that make them great from a historical perspective, and behind those things is usually a person of some sort. Sometimes they're still alive, sometimes they've gone and departed into the great beyond, but we like to talk about them on this segment, Local Legends. Mountain Man, a bit of a living legend yourself, given how important you are to this town, but is there anyone from the town's past that plays an especially formative role?
Well, I think there's a few characters that you might say play a central role. One of the first and foremost that comes to mind, I know I mentioned that city boys and city slickers like yourselves aren't always welcome. Obviously, Elliot accepted here. Thank you for coming. I love the hat that you're wearing right now.
Thanks.
But say some type of person, perhaps his name is Vince, comes in and talks down to the locals. Well, a certain man named Sheriff Bulwark has gone down in local legend as the type of person who helps us chase them out. There's a little more story, but it'd probably take me 85 to 95 minutes to tell you that. But just know that he's here, always keeping an eye out for us.
Speaking of the sheriff, I want to talk about the jail in the town, because eventually it seems like every prisoner will be in solitary confinement regardless of their crime, because they keep sinking down.
That's an astute observation. I think one of the things people forget about Marshfield is that there actually is no death penalty. Despite Mississippi's backwoods kind of attitude about these things, I think people look to Marshfield as a more gentle, civilized culture where you can have philosophical discussions without all the pretense of maybe city college boys coming in here talking about architecture the way that they think they should talk about it. And so lacking that death sentence, the way we dole out sentences is actually how high you are in the building. So the prison is sinking at a rate of 10 to 15 feet per day. And your length of stay as well
per day, sir? It sinks day. Per day.
This is, like I said, not all parts sink at the same rate. So we do have the prison strategically located in the just mostly the pulpiest part of town. It's almost as if it's made out of your book. So, some of the most violent offenders, those who perhaps society finds beyond repair, we will place them in the first ground floor, and should they survive the quickly sinking prison's rate of decay, they are innocent and free to go. Obviously, that comes with its own difficulties, but still.
Wow, I didn't expect that. I also want to point out, sorry to keep coming back on this, Elliot has several college degrees. He just doesn't have one in architecture. So when you say college city boy, you know, it's sort of, I get the idea that you're trying to single me out, you know, but Elliot's actually, I'm sorry.
I'm just more of like a salt of the earth type of guy, Vince.
And, oh, you know. He's very well-herbed, crusted, nice.
Elliot,
oh,
you're actually pushing your glasses up with your pointer finger as you say that.
And by salt of the earth, my diet this week consists of only earth salts. That's the other thing that I think people appreciate.
And if I can add, beyond the several degrees, which I do note are just sort of strewn about the RV that we're sitting in, which is very nicely appointed, I will note that Elliot seems to be more of the type that's educated in life and the full richness of life and appreciating everything around him. So, you know, take it for what you will, but I think he's on the level. Which is important in a town like Marshfield.
That is so askew that some portions are sinking at 10 feet a year and some portions are sinking 10 feet a day. So we've talked about Sheriff Bulwark, and Vince already alluded at the top of the episode about the sign from God to the founder to build Marsh Field here. And that, of course, was the Blue Jay holding the garden hose on a tip semi-truck. But I know that there are some conflicting ideologies on this, Mountain Man. Can you expound upon it?
Oh, certainly. Well, I mean, in the sense that Vince is ever right, he's entirely wrong on what the symbol that led us to Marshfield was. I do appreciate that an overturned pickup truck may be the perception that someone like Vince might have had about us. But beyond that, we tell a little bit of a local legend about four city slickers who came into our town and learned that the way we do things is a little differently. And the image that our founder had was one of these boys lying asleep at night, sweat dripping down his forehead, thinking about all the things he had seen when he came to a little backwoods small town. He imagines himself floating down the river with a couple of his buddies, a couple city slickers, condescending, talking about overturned pickup trucks. And he wakes, the image of a fat hand rising from the river. It's stuck in his head, and so our town founder traveled the city and the countrysides alike, trying to find a hand sticking up from the inside of a river. And here, in Marshfield, right in the center of town, is where he found that exact image, drawn on a piece of paper by someone who is tired of traveling.
Wait, so he found the hand sticking out of the river, or it was a drawing of a hand sticking
This is where the reports get a little conflicting. Some say that it was an actual hand sticking out of a river. Some say that it was his own hand sticking up out of a bathtub. I personally believe that architecture has a huge role in our lives, and that a small architectural drawing of a hand sticking up out of a river is exactly what left him here.
Well, that is a circuitous story if I've ever heard one. It sort of reminds me of a film that I think, and maybe we've chatted about it on the show at one point, Elliot. I'm having trouble recalling. Isn't it sort of loosely aligned with the plot of some movie?
The name escapes me right now. Maybe it'll come up. Maybe we'll be able to think of it later.
It's not the Mighty Ducks, right? It's not the Mighty Ducks. For sure not.
Is it called River Rats? No, I can't think of it. I don't know.
No.
Would it happen to be the Green Mile? That is a very popular street in our town. So that might be, or the Longest Yard, which is literally just someone's yard who keeps getting stretched by the amount of sinkage going on in his neighbor's plot. Because we all know the slope is far longer than either of the two adjoining sides in an equilateral triangle. Or in a right triangle.
That's that architecture and math talk I just thrive on, Mountain Man.
You don't have to lick your lips so feverishly when he says stuff like that, Elliot. Well, okay. You know, I've learned a thing or two. Very murky, much like the water that floods all the streets in this town. A description of how the town was founded and formed. Maybe we can answer a few more questions in our next segment, Elliot.
I think so, Vince. Let's go to Wouldn't You Like to Know?
So, listeners, Wouldn't You Like to Know is our weekly opportunity given to you to write in to our show with your specific questions, queries, and inquisitions. We like to read these questions to our guests or have them read them to us and get some answers for you. And we have time for three each and every week. This week is no different. And I think, Elliot, you've got the first one.
I do. This one comes from Terry in Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore, Maryland. So
yeah,
sort of a sister
city. A little known
city.
Baltimore. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a horse town.
Oh,
Baltimore.
Interesting.
Just a little bit. Maybe we'll go there sometime. But Terry in Baltimore wants to know a little more about the architecture in the town. And we have just the man to help us out, Terry. He says, what are some of the most iconic buildings that Mountain Man has built in Marshfield?
Well, that's a fantastic question. And I think actually two such structures or parks come to mind. The first being our town pool, which I know what you're thinking. Couldn't you just swim in the river? Well, Vince, that's a filthy, awful thing to think. Our people are civilized. We appreciate pools.
Vince, why would you think
that? I didn't suggest that. I would have never suggested. Yeah, no.
As you might expect, as the city continues to sink into the ground 10 feet per year on average, certain parts of the town continue to get higher and higher away from the ground, such as the diving board, which, over the past 10 years, has increased to a height of 150 feet in the air. It attracts some of the world's most famous Olympic divers who come here to practice It also attracts a fair amount of people wishing to end their lives by jumping into the pool, which is actually empty at all times. It's both tragic and beautiful at the same time.
Because the diving board wasn't actually the diving board of a pool originally. It was just a diving board that was on a street. And as that street started to sink, it just became, you know, known as the diving board. But no water is actually in this giant abyss.
That's correct. And we did try to put cement in at a certain point because we believed perhaps we would turn it into a pool. But really, what was at one point a dock just standing out there in the open is now, it's really more of a pool of corpses and other viscera just sort of strewn about. That's building number one.
Loosely termed building.
Mm-hmm. Yes, obviously. And my personal favorite building, because I do fancy myself a man of film, a character, if you will, is our local movie theater. It's fantastic because it is the only 20-story movie theater in the country that I am aware of, and I am not willing to Google that. It's a building where you could see any of this year's hottest films, but because we do not like to build stairs in our town, do not ask why, Vincent. That's a architectural question that I will not entertain.
Vince, stop asking the question.
I haven't spoken in 6 minutes.
Well, now you've spoken 12 seconds ago. Thanks a lot.
Mountain Man, please continue.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Elliot. And again, beautiful hat. I do love the ornamentation on it.
Thank you.
Because of the constant sinking of the town and our inability to go upstairs at any point, we do have to preload all of our films over the next 20 years. So it does provide some opportunities for some interesting questions and conversations about the future of film that I think most city slickers like Vince's self might not be aware of.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. You have films that are essentially from the future, and as they get down to the ground level, that is when people will be able to finally see them.
Yeah, yes, both films and employees from the future. It's quite nice. The concession stand really shows some interesting changes in our culinary tastes at movie theaters.
What are some future concessions that you can think of?
Well, you know, right now when you go to a movie theater and you buy one of those hot dogs that's rolling around, in the future, those hot dogs are spun vertically. It's revolutionized the way that people decide to eat a small piece of a pig's colon.
Wow, I can't even imagine getting a vertical hot dog at a movie theater. Can you, Vince?
No, it's...
Can you even call that going to the movies?
It really defies imagination to picture what is usually a horizontal food rotated 90 degrees.
It took some very serious architectural engineering to get us to that point, but I think that the work that I'm going to have to will have done over the next few years is going to be integral.
Just for our listeners who are constantly looking at the internet to see what new movies are coming out, what is something, just give us a taste of a movie that they can look forward to maybe in 15, 20 years.
Oh, certainly. Well, I guess one of the big trends that people will want to be knowing about that's coming up is this trend of turning popular applications on your cell phone into movies. So,
like the Emoji Movie.
The Emoji Movie. Oh, that's a fantastic example, Elliot. Again, showing your shining example of intelligence to all your listeners, that's a real gift.
Emojis aren't an app.
I think they are.
Well, I guess in your narrow-minded definition of what an application could be, I guess, well, maybe that's not an application, but in ours, I think Elliot and my more enlightened view might be.
All right. What are some application? Yeah, what are some application-based movies that'll be happening in the future?
Well, what about Semicolon, the film, or Character Limit, starring Jake Gyllenhaal?
Character Limit, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, actually sounds pretty good.
That's like where it's the sequel to the film where you can only use a certain amount of your brain.
Is that
and then
right.
Jake Gyllenhaal's right, intelligence right. expands?
Is that starring Ned Beatty, or is that a different film that I'm thinking of?
I think that's I still cannot remember what that film is, but I think it might be related to that one. But
okay,
Character Limit is great. I love the Character Limit app, by the way, that I have on my phone that tells me if I've used too many characters in texts.
And I think text-to-voice or voice-to-text is going to be a fantastic romantic comedy that people are really going to look forward to seeing. It's It's a real fun romp.
Is that a Jason Segel one?
No, that's actually starring Olivia Munn, though she's not quite as good at this point. Though, to be fair, I'm not certain that she ever was. Jason Segel actually happens to star in one of my favorites called Home Button. It's a real gripping tale of one father's willingness to go as far as he can to help his daughter get home.
That sounds amazing. I feel like the cinema will progress so much by the time people can see that movie. I mean, with the vertical hot dogs and all.
Oh, beyond just 3D and all of those kind of chair-shaking features, I think people are really going to be stunned when Smell-O-Vision finally shows up in theaters and helps people with the newest film from Columbia Pictures, Search Bar. Search Bar is hilarious, disgusting, but also it's worth a sniff. Smells good to me, will say movie reviewers in 2019.
I will note none of the things you mentioned were apps. And also, I would like to tack on with one more question. What's at the top floor right now? What's the top floor of the theater hold? That's probably the deepest glimpse into the future that you're pontificating, Mountain Man. I'd love to hear it.
It's a highly conceptual film, if you would call it that. I think by the time we get to what the top floor currently is, which will be 2029, it will be just a movie theater employee gently sweeping the aisles, removing all the detritus and leftover snacks, which, again, at that point will be puffed quinoa and with gently grated Parmesan. And at that point, that will be film. That will be nominated for an Academy Award in 2029.
So something that we see as so avant-garde now will just be the norm in the future, is what you're saying.
It'll be called employment. It's really a fantasy ride for the people of the future.
Is this an app as well, or is it by that time has the app trend subsided?
You're right in expecting that there will be no more app movies at that point, because at that point we will have progressed beyond cell phones too. So I think if you went down to the local Circuit City, which will have come back by the time that it reaches the ground floor, I think you'll see a lot of interesting technological trends that are popping up, and one of which being no cell phones.
What a true glimpse into cinema, the future, and sometimes in some ways the past. Maybe we can move on to a second question, which also has to deal with the cinema. Ooh, I love when our questions have to do with one another.
Me too. So what does it have to say, Vince?
So this comes from Jolene in Galveston, Texas. Jolene wants to know, hey, Vince, Elliot, and guest, I've got a movie that I love, and though it probably never make it into the cinema in Marshfield, Mississippi. There was a big space there. There's a large empty space of letters. So I tried to be faithful to her recitation. And she goes on to say, it'll never be shown in the theater there, but it has a lot of history as it was shot and set in Marshfield, Mississippi. Do you guys care to talk about one of my favorite Christmas flicks, Elf?
Wow. Yeah, I thought it was going to be something else, Vince, but
What do you mean? I mean, what indication did you have from the letter that it wouldn't go in this direction?
I don't know. I just thought that, you know, she was talking about a movie from the past, and I was thinking even further back than Elf. But I guess Elf, you know, at this point is, what, 15 years old. So, yeah, that sounds great to me. I'd love to talk about Will Ferrell and, you know, whoever else is in that movie. James Caan.
Zooey Deschanel, hello?
New Girl is there. I think that's her name, is New Girl.
Yeah, right. She played New Girl in the movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. She was new to town.
New Girl is a spinoff of Elf. Is that right?
I believe that's correct.
Well, okay. So we've already tread some ground. Is it true? Was Elf set and shot? I seem to remember it taking place in Manhattan, New York, but, you know, I guess I'm not 100% sure. It's been a few years since I've seen the film.
Well, our city does have several nicknames, and I think you might be confused here, Vince, and it's no fault of your own small mind, but we are often called the Manhattan of Lower Central Mississippi, and I think that may be one of the reasons our writer here is confused. As far as I'm aware, Elf was not shot and set here, but the sequel, which is called New Elf, is shot and set in Marshfield, Mississippi.
New Elf? So
what is New Elf about?
Well, New Elf is about a quirky young lady who just doesn't quite seem to understand how social mores work and gets herself into all sorts of Christmas-themed shenanigans while her friends try to wrangle her back towards modernity.
Can you just give an example of what a Christmas-themed shenanigan is? It's kind of escaping me right now.
Oh, certainly. So, what's your favorite thing about Christmas, Vincent?
I like cookies.
Okay, well, that's the wrong answer. Elliot, help him out here.
The decorations, of course.
Yeah, well, fantastic, Elliot. You seem to understand things. Vince, you're still struggling. The decorations say on the top of a box that you're wrapping for a gift.
Of course.
This elf, this new elf with delightful bangs and impossibly big eyes, is wrapping gifts for small children, sick children that Vince probably wouldn't care about, but Elliot certainly does. And she hears that she needs to add a bow on top of the box and ends up providing a high-powered crossbow to a small child. That's the type of Christmas-themed shenanigan that we might encounter in New Elf.
What a wholesome caper.
What I like about New Elf is that it seems to have nothing to do with the original film. Is that a trend that happens later on in cinema?
Almost certainly, because at this point there are so many people trying to make it or break it in Hollywood that there's a new law passed in California preventing actors from appearing in more than one film. So sequels in the early 2020s become just impossible.
How truly fascinating. Well, Mountain Man, you've already been such a wellspring of information that I'm reticent to ask you for more, but do you have the final letter for us? I see you fidgeting with a very pulpy sort of papyrus-style paper in front of you.
I am, and it's because I tried to print out this email so I wouldn't have to use any of your electricity on your RV to power my laptop, but I received an email from Albert G. at aninconvenientemail.org. Albert writes, "Hello, fellas, and especially Elliot and Mountain Man. I'm writing to you about a pressing issue facing our fair planet, and Marshfield in specific. The movie Elf was set in the North Pole, where there are ice caps that may be melting at this present day. Scientists believe that mankind has contributed heavily to this melting of ice caps and the global climate change that we're experiencing today. What type of people's fault is that? City boys? Or the folk from down in South Central Mississippi? What do you think, Vincent? Sincerely, Albert G."
Wow, what an insightful question from Albert at aninconvenientemail.org, the leading institution on climate change. Vince, so yeah, what do you have to say? The question seemed to be directed at you.
Yeah, strangely, it was originally addressed not to me specifically, but now I'm called upon to answer. I see. Okay. It's tough, you know? It's a very complicated issue. You know, scientists can't even agree who's most to blame. I think emerging markets, whether it was the U.S., maybe at the turn of the century, or currently Asia, the lack of regulations, they are a really contributing factor. I think you can't really boil it down to a city boys or country folk argument.
Mountain Man,
se.
Sounds like a pretty city boy answer to me.
It does, and actually, I just realized, turning over the paper, it says, specifically, the answer is it is Vincent's fault.
Now, I'm not certain how it could be my fault alone. I wasn't even born when the original emission crisis started in the late 1800s.
Oh, I'm sorry. As I continue to unfurl this papyrus email, I'm realizing that there is more written on here that says, if he is a stammering and a yammering, that must mean that he is to blame. Signed, Albert G.
He signed it again.
He's kept signing it. This is the third or fourth signing.
It's almost as if a book tour is incredibly important to this man, and he's just practicing his own signature over and over for years on end.
It is very strangely what it's like, indeed.
Listen, I can empathize. I mean, with the impending release of our almanac and the tour that we're going to go on, we have to practice our signature a lot. And that's maybe what he's referring to, is that Vince probably used a little bit more paper than me, which contributes to the fall of a lot of trees and the desecration of rainforests, which then, increases the CO2 emissions and greenhouse gases, which melts the polar ice caps, which destroys the world. So it can be, in fact, traced to Vince.
And, you know, I didn't want to blame you two boys for any of this, but when it comes down to it, which one of you two insisted on having both hard and soft cover for your books? Now, don't go blaming Xander.
Yeah, Xander actually advocated for a medium hardness book. I mean, maybe we should shoulder the blame. I wanted a really hard cover, and you wanted a really Really soft cover, Elliot.
So maybe we're both to blame for the entire global climate crisis.
Maybe we're all a little bit to blame, right, Mountain Man?
Incorrect. I would expect that most of our listeners at home would understand that a hard cover is a much bigger carbon footprint, and I'm sure that's why you opted for soft cover there, Elliot.
Yeah, the soft cover does seem to degrade a lot more, even by a simple touch, and it will leach more into the land and disintegrate.
And as I hold it in my hand, the hard cover seems to radiate a sort of smog heat that just, it burns the eyes, and it can't possibly be good for the environment to create such a foul abomination of human creation.
All right, this is in no way accurately describing what is going on with this hardcover book. Perhaps this is an elegant time to segue into our next segment, Elliot.
And that's called You Can't Do That Here.
So listeners, you might have heard of these sort of phenomenons or funny loopholes in time and history where these laws get put on the books that are hyper-specific to the towns that we visit. We always get a good laugh out of them, or sometimes they can be even useful to learn about. So we're talking about the laws that are specific here to Marshfield, Mississippi. Mountain Man, certainly you who deals with building codes and zoning regulations all the time must know a thing or two about the legislation here in Marshfield. Care to shed some light on that?
Oh, certainly. Well, I'm sure you're familiar with obscenity laws and maybe have even been charged with a few in your own time, Vince. There is one very specific obscenity that you are not allowed to scream in the center of town. Would you boys care to wager what that would be?
I'm not falling for that old trick. What if I say it on accident and you send a constable to lock me up, Mountain Man?
That is a fair guess, but I believe that, Vince, you might not trust me as much as Elliot does. Elliot, do you have a guess?
Is it Marsh?
It is not.
That's part of the name, Elliot.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
It is actually illegal in Marshfield to tell someone to squeal like a pig.
Mm.
It's punishable by first floor 3 days.
Wow. Almost certainly lethal.
The first floor, meaning it might be, at this point, depending on where in the town that first floor is, could be hundreds of feet below the surface of the earth.
It is actually difficult to inter people there, so you're right, Elliot, that's almost certainly a death sentence.
I'm the one that said that.
Well,
no, I think I did.
So let's move on to sort of unpack that phrase, squeal like a pig. That's a reference to some film, right? Was it the original Batman starring Adam West?
I want to say The Expendables.
No, that can't be right either.
I was thinking perhaps it was Red? That movie that had the old people who were just kind of looming around because they hadn't done any action films in a very long time. Is that the film that it's from?
No, but I see. I think it's from Being John Malkovich, and John Malkovich was in Red.
You know, that's a very good guess, Vincent. You're really coming along. Congratulations.
That film studies major really is paying off a lot, Vince.
Thanks to Loyola of Marymount for signing that degree in specific. I learned a lot during my time there. So squeal like a pig, is it based on the fact that that comes from the movie Being John Malkovich, or is that something else entirely that led to it?
No, I believe you're right on the money there. A few decades ago, someone snuck up into the theater's top floor at the time, which was playing movies from the early to mid 2000s, and they saw the movie Red, and they decided, this is such an abominable phrase, and I imagine the children will all be saying it at some point in the future. We should pass legislation now so that we can just get rid of those folks.
Makes sense.
So in an almost Minority Report-esque dystopia that Marshfield lives in, you can, by examining future cinema, create laws and legislature to prevent people from even doing a crime in the first place, or at least apprehending them for one they may commit.
It's precisely why GIFs are outlawed in Marshfield. They do become quite a dangerous thing in group text, the movie. It's a real problem.
I think we've heard quite enough about what's going to be illegal. Maybe we can learn something about what's going on right now in our final and favorite segment, Elliot.
And that's called Did You Know?
So listeners, Did You Know is your chance to listen to a segment that is shorter than usual by way of us firing five rapid-fire facts back and forth at one another. We have time for five each and every week, And Mountain Man, I'll take your itching at the trigger of your blunderbuss as a literal interpretation of you itching to give us our first Did You Know factoid.
Certainly. Did you know that the town was founded shortly after a trio vowed to keep their story of death and survival a secret for the rest of their lives?
I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
Almost conflicting to the previous origin stories we've heard of the town thus far.
It does. A little incongruous, but, you know, he's the expert. Do you care to expound?
No.
Well, in that case...
Yeah, I guess, these are fast facts, and I didn't know that. But guys, did you know there was a certain fashion statement, and Mountain Man has already commented on my hat, and it's a hat that people are encouraged to wear in Marshfield, Mississippi.
Oh, really? Is that so?
Would you care to describe it?
Yes, Mountain Man, and you've commented on how amazing it is, but it has a very large plume of orange flags on it. And they're several feet high. They're actually, because we're sitting in the RV right now, they're bent at the ceiling. But if I was outside walking around on a sidewalk that was already sunk, you'd still be able to see me because of the flags.
Ah, so if you fall into a sinkhole or hidden depression, you can actually still be seen and rescued potentially with the plumage on your hat.
Exactly. And then different people in the town are deemed more important than others and thus are given different colors of plumage. So if you see, for instance, a yellow plume of flags walking around, you know, I don't really need to waste my time helping that person, but I should help the orange one.
So does this have something to do with my hat, which has a 1-inch tall stubby marsh green flag on it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to see that anywhere. And I mean, even if you bend down to tie your shoe, you're not going to see that.
It doesn't even go over the top of the hat. You can't even see it from a profile.
I can't say too much to you about this, Vincent. I wouldn't want to insult you, but, you know, as someone who clearly is growing, I'd just like to tell you, please don't order any food at any restaurants here with a hat like that on. Just for your own safety, just... I would avoid eating or drinking anything that someone else gives you in Marshfield.
All right, I guess I'll stick to my pre-packed Laura bars then. I didn't know that. I'm glad I do. But did you guys know that there's a popular music festival, sort of like a battle of the bands, but reserved to a duel of two specific instruments that gets played each and every year here?
Oh, wow. What would that be, Vince?
They call it dueling saxophones, and it's a pair of virtuosos that come from all over the country to sax off against each other.
So they're just firing hot sax at one another.
They're getting wet and wild in Marshfield, saxing back and forth as fervently as they can.
And I would like to say the fingering there is excellent when they are dueling.
It's a sight to behold, I've been told.
Why do they have this festival?
I believe that it's an homage to a scene in a movie in which there is a dueling saxophones moment, or maybe it's a different instrument that's dueling and they sort of used it to be saxophones because we're in the South, the blues, etc. If I'm not mistaken, that is the Santa Claus 2 is where that scene is.
You know, I have seen similar scenes in Little Nicky.
Little Nicky, the Sandler, Adam Sandler is a devil from hell, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it's a great film. Underrated film.
Mountain Man, does this music have any hand in the erosion of the town and the sinking of it faster?
Well, I would have to say that the percussive beats of the drums that play alongside those dueling saxophones certainly would play a role. They probably beat the ground a little bit harder than they should and send us tumbling into the abyss from which we all came at one point in our own history. And, you know, in that way, it's a beautiful symbol. It's a tragic suicide of music here, I'd say.
It doesn't help that you guys, for several years, have hired that drummer from the movie Birdman to just continue playing throughout the entire festival. It makes the erosion just exponentially faster.
Watching his hands fly about from drum to cymbal back to drum, it gives me whiplash.
Mountain Man, this is fascinating stuff. Do you have another Did You Know for us?
Yes, certainly. One thing that we do have to keep in mind is that as other portions of this fair city do sink into the ground, that certain parts remain higher than others, and one of the places that has unfortunately remained the highest is our cemetery. So, as we've grown as a city, we've instituted a new law and a new ordinance that instead of burying our dead, because they will surely come uncovered as our town falls below the depths from which they are buried, we actually have required individuals to be buried by tying them to heavy objects and tossing them into the river.
Ah, that seems practical, actually.
Why wouldn't you just use that pit that the diving board is over to throw the bodies in?
Well, I wouldn't want to confuse people. Someone believes that their grandmother has died of natural causes, and instead they see her body next to an Olympic runner who believed that they could extend their skills to the diving board. I wouldn't want to confuse the children of the town, so I think that's probably one of the main reasons.
Makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
I didn't know that, but Vince, do you have the next Did You Know for us?
Oh, I sure do. Did you guys know, here in Marshfield, Mississippi, there a little extra goes along with your normal uniform if you're a public official.
So can you describe it?
Well, yeah, it's not exactly one standard issue edition, but you need some way of floating as you go about your daily duties, since, you know, we can't have business grinding to a halt every time a meter maid falls into a blind sinkhole into the bottom of the earth. So you're required to wear a life jacket or one of those little inner tubes that has a dinosaur head on the front of it, or water wings, something like that.
Mountain Man, can you describe your city-issued piece of flair that you have to wear?
Yes, well, as a fairly important member of the town, it's obvious that I'm essential to its ongoing survival, and because of that, I've been given one of the utmost forms of personal security and pieces of flair here. I am now constantly equipped with the house from up. I have to live in it. I sit on the porch most days and just float gently above the whole city as it sinks below me.
That seems like a perfect solution. How were you able to acquire the house from up?
They just sort of gave it to me. They said, well, there was an old man who lived here, so have this house. And ever since, I've been living inside it.
That's amazing, and it probably helps you able to survey areas a lot more and survey the heights of the buildings that you're building.
It definitely helps me get ready for the films that may be coming out in 10 to 20 years that most people haven't, because I can just sort of watch them from way on high.
Is there any Up sequel that's in the works?
Yeah, actually there is. It's before they institute the policy against having actors reprise their roles. So the dog from Up actually comes back, and he comes back to a little town called Marshfield, and he takes up Olympic diving. It's a terrible, tragic film, but at the end of the day, it's worth watching.
Wow, another peek into the future of cinema, something I didn't expect when we rolled in on our hoverboat to Marshfield, Mississippi. Thanks so much for joining us, Mountain Man. It's been a pleasure.
One more Did You Know fact, Vince?
No, we don't, actually.
Really?
That's five.
Oh, okay. Well, continue.
What a folksy way of enumerating.
It's with a sinking heart that I move on to our final segment, a farewell from us to you, listeners. It's called Wish You Were Here.
Listeners, we obviously wish that you could join us on our journey across America, but that's just not possible. So we have the next best thing for you, a postcard from us to you. It goes something like this. Dear listeners, wish you were here in Marshfield, Mississippi.
A city that's always sinking, save for the efforts of one dedicated architect who goes by Mountain Man.
A city where if you want to look into the cinematic future, all you have to do is look up.
A city where you can't utter a few phrases, such as squeal like a pig, but you can learn a lot about topography and architecture.
I'm sorry, Vincent. You did just say what I think you said, correct?
Elliot, could you fire up the fanboat? We gotta get out of here.
A town that we have a sinking feeling you're gonna love.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Deliverance. The movie was Deliverance.
Hey listeners, hope you enjoyed our episode from Marshfield, Mississippi, and I hope you join us next week when we're in Hampshire, New Hampshire.
Now don't tell anyone, but Hampshire, New Hampshire is harboring the fugitive bloodline of England's American monarch, King Bosco IV. Come back, it's going to be fun.